WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
The Trump administration is coming for two major Illinois school districts. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Last week, the Trump administration announced it was opening an investigation into two major Illinois school districts, Deerfield District 109 and Chicago Public Schools. And at the center of the investigation, well, it's politically conservative groups pushing back against locker room policy. The investigation has broader implications than just one complaint at one school and could be another battleground for trans rights, as well as a face-off between the federal government and the Illinois legislature. To learn more, we turned to Chicago Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller. She began with detailing what led the administration to open up an investigation into these two school districts.
So this is just a continuation of these kind of same attacks we've seen at the state level. We've seen a lot of these sorts of similar moves in conservative states, and like many other things, that's moving to the federal government as well. With CPS, there's not a specific allegation aside from the fact that they're following state law, which is part of the issue with these. But in the case of Deerfield, a Deerfield parent accused the school of making her daughter change in front of a trans student, but the school has denied this allegation, saying that the student denied accommodations, private accommodations for changing after the fact.
Okay.
And so that's what's kicking this off.
So this is initially this investigation into Deerfield is what's sort of sparking the whole thing.
Yes. And CPS just also got named in this investigation, as well as the Illinois Department of Education, which is an entity that doesn't exist.
Right.
So I believe they're talking about the Illinois State Board of Education.
Right. ISB. So let's talk about these conservative groups here. What are they alleging specifically, and what should we know about them? Who are they?
So they are specifically taking issue with the fact that transgender students are being allowed to use the bathroom and locker room facilities that line up with their gender identity. And just a little about these groups. First, we have the Defense of Freedom Institute, which has been awarded by the Heritage Foundation for their work just a few years ago. And the Heritage Foundation, as we know, is the author group for Project 2025. Then we also have the Liberty Justice Center, which has been a part of a lot of anti-DEI, anti-union lawsuits.
Yeah, so we know already where they stand, right? What are the school districts saying about all of this? What do they have to say about the investigation?
It's tough because a lot of what is alleged is essentially just that they're following state law. And so in the case of Deerfield, like I said, the additional allegation that they made a student change in front of another student. They've denied that and said they offered a private accommodation for the student that was then turned down.
And does this line up at all with Illinois law?
Yeah. So Illinois state law prohibits discrimination based on gender identity, which includes the right for folks to use the bathrooms and locker rooms that line up with their gender identity, as does the Chicago Sydney ordinance since 2016 when Rahm Emanuel spearheaded that effort.
Yeah. And so where are we at with, Donald Trump was very busy, especially on that first day in January 20th, signing a slew of executive orders, many of them anti-trans. What's the status right now?
So, that's right. There's a lot of them. And a lot of them are kind of in different states of being challenged right now. A lot of them are seeing injunctions, temporary restraining orders, things like that. A lot of things that are temporarily halting them from going into place. But again, they're kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
The most recent one we're seeing that would have the most impact on some of these other ones is recently a Maryland district court judge instituted a temporary restraining order against Trump's executive order attempting to ban gender-affirming care for patients under 19. He was threatening to do that through pulling funding and things like that. But that temporary restraining order said that he can't hold funds allocated by Congress and already doled out by Congress, which is a decision we've seen in a lot of these other cases, whether it be for this or DEI programs or other things that he's targeted with this funding.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because here's the thing we have to remember. Executive orders, they're not laws. And school policies, they're actually decided on the local level. So what leverage does the White House actually have here?
That's essentially what we're seeing. These threats to pull funds, whether, you know, the courts end up ruling in his favor or not, it's currently halted. So that's one of the threats they have to kind of coerce these schools into doing this. The other is by opening these investigations. And with the Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights taking the brunt of those cuts last week, and that's the office that would be in charge of these sorts of investigations, it's kind of up in the air what potential consequences this might have, aside from just these schools being named and having the stigma of these investigations kind of attached to them.
Yeah. How are the students doing? How is this impacting them?
So, you know, if we look at the actual funding side of it, you know, loss of federal funding for schools would be a small part of their budget. They're mostly funded by state and local taxes, but it would hit, you know, students that have disabilities or students from low-income families. Schools with large populations, those would be hit the hardest, because that's where federal funding tends to go. But on the mental health side, I mean, it's hitting kids pretty hard. The Trevor Project found that last year in states that passed anti-trans laws, we saw suicide attempts in trans kids go up to or increase by at least 72% in some places.
Wow.
And that's expected to move nationwide as the attacks do.
Let's zoom out then for just a moment and step back, Violet, because beyond this very specific complaint from this conservative group of folks, there's a lot at stake here. You just got into mental health impacts. What's the process here? What's really at stake?
I mean, we have a lot of stake. We have a lot of trans rights at stake. A lot of folks, you know, the sports issues and things like that are kind of gateways to other issues. And so, you know, these are the things that tend to go first. We saw this with the kind of last large round of anti-trans legislation. I think that most people remember when bathrooms were the big issue right around 2016 when Chicago amended its code.
That's
and so
right.
These are the issues that tend to kind of pop up first before moving on to other things like gender-affirming care, other healthcare, things like that.
Yeah. I definitely remember that time, 2016, 2017. I mean, that's all we were covering at that time. It was all about bathrooms. And it's, of course, it's escalated beyond just that at this point. But, you know, when you have lawsuits like this, when you have challenges like this, I mean, is the process itself the punishment? The fact that trans folks are just going through the ringer in this type of way?
Yeah, I mean, that there's definitely kind of an aspect of suffering attached to not knowing.
Right.
There's a lot of folks, I mean, especially with the passports right now, that, you know, it's kind of up in the air whether folks will be able to get those corrected and things like that. I've been hearing a lot of folks in the stories that I've been reporting just that, again, this sort of uncertainty and the threat of legal consequence is impacting them, you know, mentally, but also physically, and just their way of moving around the world, whether that be identification or what bathroom they use or anything like that.
Absolutely. How does all of this, these investigations, how does that change the way that Title IX is used, the way that we know it today?
So Title IX has had some weird transformations, or I guess rapid transformations, I should say. So under the Biden administration, they tried to make it so that Title IX would include gender identity discrimination. The implementation of those rules were blocked January 9th, so right as Biden was going out of office. And because they were blocked and Trump came into office, he's not expected to pick up that challenge again. And so the ruling's effectively been left at the fact that gender identity isn't technically included in Title IX.
Mm-hmm.
However, in a 2020 Supreme Court decision, there is some national precedent for gender identity being included in sex discrimination. The case was Bostock v. Clayton County, and the Trump appointee, Neil Gorsuch, actually wrote the majority opinion on that, in which he said that you cannot discriminate against somebody for being transgender or for their sexual orientation without it being sex-based discrimination. So we're seeing seeing that argument pop up in a lot of these challenges and cases. And that's one of the holes that legal experts are pointing out.
And then could what happens here set like another precedent?
Yeah. So what we're looking at is, you know, obviously we're pitting the Illinois state law up against the federal law. We're
right.
also, you know, in different cases across the county or country, really. And so it's a lot of unknowns. Like I said, we're going to have to see these play out because we're seeing, again, temporary restraining orders, injunctions, things like that kind of flying left and right.
And Pritzker, Governor Pritzker, what's he saying? Has he weighed in at all on this?
Yeah, so he recently actually spoke in stark terms about his defense of trans rights, and he's been pretty consistent about that through the years, as has Attorney General Kwame Raoul, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. He has also vowed to defend gender-affirming care. The one thing that we don't know from him yet is the New York Attorney General has ordered some hospitals to continue gender-affirming care despite the executive order while it's on hold.
Right.
Attorney General Kwame Raoul hasn't done that, and he hasn't answered questions about that yet. Though he has stated his support for gender-affirming care.
We'll leave it there for now. That's Chicago Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller. You can read her full story on this. It's up at suntimes.com. Thank you so much, Violet.
Yeah, thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Meha Ahmed and edited by Linnea Dominic. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. To stay up to date on current events and local news, make sure to subscribe to the podcast or visit wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.